upon you.
That is quite the...
That was 7th grade.
Okay.
All right, good morning, everybody. I'm called to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, February 27th, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor and reverence with Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, first off, today, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda or really anything they'd like to comment on. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll turn to a very special recognition. And Barry, you and I didn't talk about this beforehand, but how about if you come on up and help us through this recognition? So we're recognizing John McKinney, who has served a mere 44 years on our County Civil Service Commission. In fact, was one of the founding members and in many ways has been the Civil Service Commission. Barry, would you expand on that?
Yeah, amen. Thanks for the opportunity, Rick. Yeah, it's a great honor for us today to be able to honor Judge McKinney for his service. So for those who don't know, the Civil Service Commission, they work very closely with the Sheriff's Office, helping us with the hiring of sworn officers and the promotions of deputies within our office. And so during my 26 years on the Sheriff's Office, I've known one Civil Service Commissioner who's always been at the forefront, and that's been John. And so we just came to the board and asked if there'd be any way that we could celebrate his 44 years of service, and obviously the board said yes, so it's our honor today to be able to do that.
Absolutely. So what we'll do from here is I want to read the recognition plaque that we have for him. And then Judge McKinney, if you have any words, we'd like to have you come up and say them, and then we're going to do a photo op right here in front. So that's where we're going to do this. So the plaque that we have to present to John L. McKinney in recognition of the 44 years of dedicated service to the Story County Civil Service Commission. Thank you for your contribution and commitment to Story County and the law enforcement community. Thank you, sir.
Can't turn down the time to say something. So I just want to thank you for having this recognition. It was kind of a startup thing when we, the commission, the code setting up the commission was in about 1974, 72, 74. And John Stark, being so generous with my time, he at that time the sheriff, he had won and he nominated me, so I've been doing it every time the 6-year term would be up. Next thing I know, John would call me and say, well, you've been reappointed again. He never asked me if I wanted to be or anything, but anyway, I think for a civil service, I think it's worked pretty well. In the early going, we had a few hearings, but as the time went on, it got pretty routine. So, and I retired a few months back, so I told the board not to put me up again. It was my term. I ended at the end of last year.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I said.
Well, John, thank you very much, and now let's do our photo op right here.
Let's see, we've got to let the hand get into position.
One of Mary's.
Absolutely, right here, right here.
I'll grab that. I would take your hand, but I think I'm getting a cold.
Oh, okay.
I don't mind your cold.
I'll breathe over here anyway.
Thank you.
Don, thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
Tommy has a box for that with all the little paraphernalia that goes along.
Okay. Yeah,
Thank you. All right, next we've got three bid openings today. A bridge, a culvert, and some resurfacing work to get done. Jeff Boone.
Good morning, Tyler.
Okay, I've given you a bid tax sheet to follow along with. So the first one we will open up is the L-L13 project, bridge replacement on 128th Street.
Here's we have two bidders. So the first one is Cunningham Reese out of Van Meter, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. Total for Cunningham Reese is $414,095.02. 414-09502. Second and final bidder is Herberger Construction out of Indianola, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. Total for Herberger is $316,164.90. 316-164-90.
Excellent.
So the apparent low bidder is Herberger. We would normally bring this back next week, but it's a limited agenda, so it'll be 2 weeks down, and we'll check the numbers and get back for an award.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. One switch.
Next, we have two culvert projects. The first one is L-C-2B-73-85, and the second project is L-LIN-5-73-85.
Boulder. Wait a minute.
Contractor we have is on your third sheet, third page for this one, Weideman Incorporated, bid bond is attached and signed. And for project L-LIN-5-73.
Did you return to Tyler or what contractor there? I'm sorry.
It's Weideman,
Weideman.
Back page, and it's the second project, LIN-5.
Yes. Their bid is $94,408.24, 944-0824. second project. Devon has signed an attach.
This is who?
St. Weideman.
So this is for the CB, C2B?
Yes. The bid is $171,182.50. 171,182.50.
Okay, these two culverts are tied, so I'll read off the total combined for the two you read off. It's $265,590.74, 265,590.74.
The next bidder we have is Midwest Contracting. I believe they're on your second page. Bid bond is signed and attached for project LAN5, the second project. Their bid is $94,592.40, 945,920. The second project, C2B, bid bond is signed and attached. Their bid is $163,579.00, 1635790.
Adding the two together gives us $258,171.40, 258,171.40.
Is Progressive Structures. They're on the same page as Midwest, the second page. They are out of Alcater, Iowa. Bid bond is signed and attached. Their bid for the C2B project is $174,011.50, 1740-1150. For the LIN5 project, bid bond is signed and attached. The bid is $106,098.50, 1069850.
Total for those two is $280,110, 280110.
Next bidder is Riley Construction out of Ossian, Iowa. First project will be LIN5. Riley's bid is $94,834.00, 948,300.
Here we have the bid bond for him.
Yes, bid bond is signed and attached. For project C2B, bid bond is signed and attached. Riley's bid is $164,774.00. 1-6-4-7-7-4-0-0. Excuse me, it's 779.
Adding $259,613, 259613.
Next bidder is Rodness Brothers Excavating. They are out of Lake Mills, Iowa. First project is LIN5. Bid bond is signed and attached. Rodness Brothers bid is $116,266.40. 1-1-6-2-6-6-4-0. The second project, CTV, bid bond is signed and attached. Their bid is $198,296.80. 1-9-8-2-9-6-8-0.
For a total of $314,563.20, 314563.20.
Next bidder we have is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. The first project I need is C2B. Bid bond for that project is signed and attached.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Peterson Contractors.
Thank you.
On your second sheet. Their bid for C2B is $135,481.30. 1-3-5-4-8-1-3-0. For the second project, LIN5, their bid bond is signed and attached. Their bid is $82,909.80. 829-0980.
For a total of $218,391.10. 218391.10.
For these. So the current low bidders is Peterson Contractor. We'll check the numbers and come back next week.
2 weeks.
For 2 weeks, yeah.
Okay, the last one. Yeah, hold on. This is HMA Resurfacing on West 190th Street, Project L-F20A. First bidder is En-ROADS out of Des Moines, Iowa. Bid bonds attached and signed. Total for En-ROADS is $240,007.90. 240,007.90. A little bit. We're fortunate enough to have Manats as a local asphalt provider in Ames, and En-ROADS is a new company. It's kind of a breakout of Manats, but there is competition now. That's good.
Yeah, normally we get to see one.
Yes. That's why I brought that up. Second bidder is Manats. Out of Brooklyn, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Signed. Totals for Manat is $216,680.58. 216,680.58. That is it. So Manats is the apparent low bidder, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. Good job.
Once again,
I stand the competition.
For the people out there watching, what we projected the costs were on all three of these bid processes beneath what we thought they were going to cost us. So Mr. Rogiani did well today.
All right, agency reports. Juvenile Court Services, we've got Jerome here today.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I apologize. I had to step out last quarter for my presentation.
Well, that was us.
Yeah, we did that. Not you. Us being us.
As I reported, there's been a transition at the county attorney's office, and we are pleased to be working with Lucas Richardson. And we continue our pleasurable working relationship with Lynette Van Weingarten. Lucas's transition has been flawless. We also continue to work with the county attorney with the truancy issues. Just this week, we worked with an elementary family. They have three kids. Ms. Reynolds sat in on that meeting, and some directive action took place while the meeting was held. My middle paragraph on the front page, just kind of a bragging thing here with Juvenile Court Services. We have some very efficient juvenile court officers in the EPICS model. That's our structured meetings where we hold an intervention with our children that we work with. And they are capable of training other juvenile court officers throughout the state. I also have my budget items listed on the next following pages. Like many other state agencies, we're anticipating the end of the sessions in Des Moines on what our allocations will be. We have an email that I attached from our state court administrator believing that we'll have about a $1.6 million reduction for our next budget.
Starting
here,
estimate that's positive, right?
It is sure positive, yes. Yeah, about a $7 million difference. I have a small paragraph here on decategorization. Board member Chitty sits on the board with myself. We've had some productive programs that we've approved here recently, and we're sitting on budget pretty close with the allocations that were granted there.
again, then I have my attachments. Any questions?
Question for Jerome.
On a school-by-school basis, in regards to truancy, is there a difference between school districts?
I don't know if I have that answer. Right now, we've been focusing on some of the Ames elementaries. We focused here in Nevada, and we've also focused in Gilbert and the Ballard school districts.
But as far as implementation, they pretty much do it the same, or I guess that's where I'm going.
Yes, everyone sits around the table and we try to eliminate the barriers on why the truancy exists.
Okay. But it's fair to point out that the Ames Community School District actually pulled together a group which kind of initiated this new process that we're trying to replicate in all of our school districts. But really, the epicenter of that was with the Ames School District pulling that group together.
Yes, Ames initiated this, and then other school districts have
joined in,
accepted or are starting to follow through. Yes,
good.
Well, I think it's really fair. You pointed it out earlier. It's fair to underscore that County Attorney Reynolds has taken a really active role in both that group that Ames Community School District initiated, but now in the ongoing process. I think, as you pointed out, there were meetings this week that the county attorney attended dealing directly with a family.
Exactly. Yes.
And how does that work? Is that having the legal component at the table saying your children or you are going to be in some kind of legal trouble? Is that the purpose there, or are the county attorney as opposed to the rest of the group? Or
I believe that's the elephant in the room.
Okay.
But we want to avoid any type of legal problems for parents.
Yeah, and so, Lord, I think what you say is accurate. I would just state it a little differently. It is making sure that all entities, JCS, the school district, the school, local school administration, and local law enforcement are all pulling in the same direction, which, Jerome, for me, knowing what our process was before compared to now, that's what's different. Having everybody together pull in the same direction rather than each one handling their own part individually.
Exactly. Department of Human Services is also at that table. It's better than the county attorney sending a threatening letter.
Right. That is perfect.
Yes.
Thanks.
It seems to be benefiting the situation.
Yes, I agree.
So, Jerome, thank you. Any other questions for Jerome?
I noticed on some of the major services here that we're halfway through the year, but you're at 56 to about 64 and 67% of the money used. Is that typical, Jerome? I mean, that we're a little ahead of the 50% mark in the expenditure of some of the money?
I think if you look at past reports, it's probably the same.
Okay.
You're not seeing anything that causes you huge concern unless there's some kind of pullback of dollars that you're expecting to have for this year.
No, on page 2 at the top, protective living, this is probably the most itemized part that I'm involved with. This could vary year from year just due to the number of kids that we're detaining. We're at 35% so far this year. And we've only had a few kids in detention this year. We are keeping them about the same amount of time on average.
Mm-hmm.
But next year, you just never know how that could jump up.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you,
Ron.
Good,
Mark.
Thank you.
Enjoy the nice day.
Next, we have Mary Green Medical Center Home Health Service. Les White.
Morning, Les.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming over. First time.
It is. And I do know how to work a computer.
Well, that computer is
personality. Yeah.
We maximize life out of county.
That's right. Yeah. It's going to go in a few months.
County
a great
equipment.
Computer retirement home. But it's the right one.
There we go. Well, good morning.
Like I said, I'm Les White. I am the director of Mary Greeley Home Health, Hospice, and Story County Public Health. I began this job at the end of July, so relatively new still to it. I'm just going to share with you a little bit about what we're up to and what we do. Our service area, of course, we serve Story County. We do extend a little bit beyond that as well. We serve a 50-mile radius from Ames. So when you look at that, typically we can go all the way up into Iowa Falls, Fort Dodge. We go as far east, Marshalltown, pretty much west is Jefferson. And then we do dip down into the Des Moines area a little bit. Basically, Ankeny is about as far down as our clients go. Our mission is to advance health through specialized care and personal touch. And we do that by supporting our quality care that we do in the home. We make sure that they have a safe environment of which we are able to provide comprehensive care to them. And not only to the patient, but we provide that care to the caregiver and the family as well. In addition to that, we develop and we implement education in the community that fosters the prevention of disease, improvement in health, and we promote the maximum potential of individuals and the community. And our vision is to be the best. I'll begin with home health services. Within our home health department, we have skilled nursing care. We provide that service in the home, as well as therapy services in the home. We have physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech. On a daily basis between those two services, we average about 135 clients. Last year in Story County, related to skilled nursing, we served about 300 clients. Our homemaker services are divided up into two different types. The first is environmental. And when we think about environmental services, those are where we go buy groceries for individuals. We help clean their homes and maybe help with the meal preparation. Personal care is just that. It's personal care. It's maybe where we're helping with bathing and dressing and those types of things. Again, on a daily basis, we serve about 121 clients in that area. And last year in Story County, we served 199. So we are anticipating that that service will be increasing over the next 6 months. We do have a 24-hour response system. For us, it's Lifeline. And currently, we have 130 clients on Lifeline. Another area is Story County Public Health. In that area, I have two nurses, Sherry Zook and Teresa Ferrari. They provide senior health clinics throughout Story County. We do numerous clinics in Ames, as well as Nevada, Colo, Hawksley, and Story City. Last year, when we're looking at senior health clinics, we're looking at like blood pressure clinics as well as foot care clinics. And last year, we served over 1,800 people in Story County. Another type of clinic we offer is immunization clinics. We offer that to all ages. We have two evening clinics a month, as well as we have day clinics three times a week. Those are based out of our office across from the hospital. And last year with immunization clinics, we served over 2,700 individuals. They also do things in relationship to disease investigation and surveillance. So I know recently, I'm sure many of you have heard about the flu outbreak. We monitor that in Story County. Another recent outbreak has been the Salmonella outbreak. So again, we monitor those kinds of things in Story County. Along with tuberculosis, with the university, we have seen somewhat of an upswing in tuberculosis. And we truly believe that that's due to the fact that it's there's a new way of testing and they're finding that a little bit sooner. So with that, we monitor those individuals. The Iowa Department of Public Health provides medication, and we do direct observation therapy and watch them take their medications to make sure that they are compliant. Community education also plays a big part of public health. We do different things out in the community, like in relationship to flu, healthy living styles. We also offer a class called Matter of Balance, which really helps individuals to prevent falls in the community as we get older. And the last key component of that is emergency management. We are part of a Coalition B with several other counties. when you think of emergency management for us, probably our biggest area would be to set up points of distribution sites, or pods is what we call them. So, for instance, in the flu outbreak, if we would have found that that would have been became very, very epidemic, and we would have needed to provide something to Story County residents, then we would go and set up these points of distributions throughout the county. I will tell you, disease outbreaks, last year, I think we had 99 disease outbreaks. Hospice services. We provide skilled nursing service, hospice care in the home as well. Their average daily census is about 32, so we're a little bit smaller agency in relationship to hospice. We do also have an Israel Family Hospice House that is located in South Dakota. Probably the biggest component coming out of hospice related to the community and to Story County is our bereavement program. We serve not only the caregiver and the family, but also we have support groups in the community. So there, for instance, is a coffee group that gets together once a week just to work through their bereavement issues. We also offer other community programs, such as we recently had a Valentine's Day dinner for individuals, and we're having a class coming up cooking for one. So last year, in relationship to bereavement, we touched 206 folks in Story County. Just to let you know kind of some new opportunities for us that are coming up. Back in October of 2016, we worked with the hospital to help decrease surgical site infections for colon patients. There had seen that there was a little bit of an upswing in that. And one of the ways that we felt like we could help with that is to make a free home visit to those individuals. And we call those our health promotion visits. And really what we do with that is we provide further education in relationship to hand washing, good technique in relationship to changing their dressing or caring for that area. And this, when we're out there, we do medication reviews as well as just an overview of the environment and to make sure that they're safe. We did find that to be effective. Our disease, our surgical site infections did decrease. And so starting here, it was in December of this past year, we now are making one free visit to our hip, knees, and back post-surgical patients as well. Another opportunity that has occurred is I did some reallocating of FTEs. And we currently have a home health and hospice services coordinator. And really my vision for her is to go out into the community and just talk about what we do and what we can do and provide more education in the community. And in turn, I'm hoping then that we will see an increase in the individuals that we serve. Couldn't leave you without telling you some challenges.
You mean the challenges?
Number one, reimbursement. Again, in the news, our Medicaid system that has changed into managed care organizations continues to be a struggle. We knew it would be a struggle at the very beginning. My personal opinion is they just weren't ready for us. They weren't ready for the numbers and weren't able to take on this responsibility. So as a result of that, one of the groups, AmeriHealth, has pulled out of the mix. So now we are down to two groups. And unfortunately, right at the very beginning, the other one, AmeriGroup, said, hey, no, we can't take any more clients. So there was a period of time that we had some clients in flux. I will tell you, our clients, it's seamless to them. They have no idea in relationship to the struggles that we have for them. And we really, truly are their advocates. So those individuals that had AmeriHealth, we helped them get hooked up with another group so that they could have that. It's just we have really had to change a little bit of our practice, again, and how we do things kind of on the back end. But again, our clients, we provide the same care because we feel that's what is right. Public health funding. I already heard a little bit about some Iowa funding. In our public health dollars, they hold 3% of our budget, which is currently about a little over $6,000. We have been told, usually at the end of the fiscal year, they release that 3%. We've been told this year, don't expect that, and possibly they could be withholding a little bit more. So we will see how that turns out. And again, that, you know, as we look to the future, kind of wondering what will our budget from public health and the Iowa Department of Public Health look like next year.
Was there a reason, rationale for holding the 3% to begin with? And then did they give a reason now why they needed to hold it and possibly even more?
The reason now is just because of the financial situation that the state of Iowa is experiencing. I mean, even it's been kind of interesting, and some of there's even been a bill that's been proposed to dissolve the Iowa Department of Public Health and put it under the Department of Human Services just as a way to save money. I don't believe that will happen. The Iowa Department of Public Health is a very important agency within the state of Iowa. But basically, they just say it's due to the,
monetary. The $30 million.
So we'll see how that all plays out. Also, staffing. Fortunately, right now, I am full staffed, and I'm very excited about that. But I will tell you that our healthcare aides, they are very much in demand, and we will continue to see that demand grow as our population ages or as the baby boomers are aging. But on the upside of that, I want to thank you because our asset funding is very supportive to us and very helpful to us in supporting all the programs that I just talked about, as well as the support from Mary Broome Medical Center. So I'm proud of what we do, and I look forward to serving you in Story County in the next year. Do you guys have any questions?
Well, yeah, so I would just start with Homer has always done an outstanding job serving people in Story County and surrounding. Less everything I'm hearing about your short tenure has been outstanding. We're so excited that you're taking this on and appreciate the reality that the challenges you guys face and never make it to your clients. That's what we're supposed to be doing, and sure appreciate you doing that. Question for Les.
Two, easy one. Yeah, Lifeline, that's an electronic notification?
Yes.
Okay.
24-hour response. For some reason, that's the one for the guy. It's just that I fall in and I can't get up button.
How I say it.
Every minute for me. You see that?
We had a meeting here a week and a half ago. Chris Perrin called it over at Mary Greeley, and you and I both attended. And did any follow-up on that or anything? I came here and spoke to it just briefly at the end of the last meeting. Is there anything that you could share that would give a little more foundational knowledge to anybody in regarding the flu that we had as it passed to our communities?
Like I said, currently, what we're seeing is we're having a decline in influenza wet A. Influenza B is staying about the same. What we are seeing an upswing in is what we call influenza-like illness. So it's not necessarily being diagnosed as influenza, but it very much has very similar symptoms to that. So we are seeing an upswing in that. The group meets, we've been meeting with Mary Greeley, Iowa State, as well as Story County Medical Center, just trying to get the groups together in Story County to see where we're at. Currently, I can tell you we have not had any more incidents in schools. There has to be at least 10% absence in order for them to report that, and we have not seen any more of that. Also, the nursing homes, although they're seeing an upswing in the like illness of influenza, have not seen an increase in the other influenza. The group had decided they would meet one more time this week, and then probably we'll disband and we'll just move forward and keep monitoring.
That's it. Thanks, Marty. Laura?
No, I asked mine during. Thank you for letting me ask during.
Okay. Thanks, Les. Good job. Yeah. All right, minutes and three of them that we're doing them from February 13th. We're also doing a canvas from the 13th, and we're all going to do February 20th.
I would so move that we approve the minutes of February 13th, the February 13th canvas minutes, and the February 20th Board of Supervisor minutes as presented.
Second.
Motion to second. Any notes? Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No personnel actions. They consent agenda board.
I would present.
I would second.
Motion to second. Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing, second consideration of Ordinance 269, amending the Story County, Iowa Code of Ordinances, Chapter 85.
Hi.
Good morning, Emily.
All right, so we went through all this last week. What's new?
Nothing. There's nothing new. We didn't receive any additional comments from the public. So today we're just looking for a second consideration. And I can go through any details if you'd like. At last week's Board of Supervisors meeting, we did you did provide direction to planning and development staff to work in a, through an amendment process following the adoption of this ordinance to limit the number of days per calendar year a guest may stay in a permanent cabin. So we will be working on that process. That won't happen until the code of ordinances is codified. Otherwise, we would have to redo it. So we will wait for that process to take place.
Super. Before we open public hearing, questions or comments, Board?
I had an inquiry from a member of the public after, and I haven't been able to get back to this person yet. I appreciate that the two of you came out to my office to explain a little bit about other other factors, other hearings that the applicants of the particular property will have to go through. And I was just wondering if one of you could quickly comment about how the urban fringe plan and AIMS fits into the particular project. I know we're not talking about what we're passing today with the text amendment, but can you explain how that fits in the urban fringe plan related to especially a conditional use permit issued by us?
So you're not asking about the actual text amendment?
I'm not asking about the text amendment. I'm asking for the inquiry I got was, well, okay, what for this particular proposed project, how does the urban fringe plan play into moving forward, especially with conditional use permit?
Right. The applicant did submit a conditional use permit to allow a commercial campground on the McKay property. The property is in the Ames Urban Fringe area, and it has a designation of urban residential. And so the policies primarily focus on single-family residential development as a primary proposed use. In a perfect world, that is what the land use designation is for this particular area. And so that information has been communicated from the beginning when we first met with the applicant at conceptual review that could be a potential issue, that it wasn't consistent with the Ames River Fringe Plan. The property owner did go to the city council requesting to amend the plan to allow a park and rec type use that could potentially permit this, and it was not supported by the city council. That's the first step. Had they acted to support the submittal, Story County and Gilbert would act on that as well. We would need two of the three to have that application submitted. And again, an amendment to the map requires all three entities to approve it.
And we are in this agreement with them. Story County is a member of this agreement. So we are obligated to follow the rules of the agreement, correct?
I would say so, yes.
And I would just add that the Ames Urban Fringe Plan acts as kind of a comprehensive future land use for that 2-mile buffer around the city of Ames, similar to what we have for the C2C plan and the rest of the country.
Which is why all three entities have to agree to a change, correct?
Yeah, and all three entities have the power to withdraw from the agreement. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think you're 100% right. As long as the entities are part of the agreement, you should follow what the agreement says. I just want to underscore what you started with, what you correctly started with. What we just talked about has nothing to do with what we're getting ready to have a public hearing on. It could be that there's going to be an upcoming conversation that at least in part is going to be based on the action we take here, but any actual development of any property that has cabins would have to go through the full and appropriate process that it would have to go through on its own, irrespective of what we do today.
Would I be correct in saying, in fact, any conditional use permit for any purpose that we issued on that property would still be subject to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, correct?
Correct, on that property.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the time, but I just, based on the inquiry from a member of the public, I thought that was good to clarify.
Absolutely. Sure. And you did a great job, but let's do it again. There's a wall between what we're talking about and any specific property.
Correct.
Okay. So as I said, there were no public comments coming back after the first reading. We didn't get any public comments regarding this item.
Correct.
So let's open the public hearing. We'll start with Brad Perkins, who submitted this request in order to allow for a mechanism to possibly have that conversation down the road. Brad, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Thank you for hearing from me again today. And I appreciate your enthusiasm for the idea anyway at our last meeting. It is this exact point that I would like to discuss here a little bit, you know, that we were talking about. I'm not a developer. I'm an engineer. I teach at Iowa State. And this is my first process in trying to start family business. And as an engineer, I read codes frequently, and it's part of what I do. But I will admit that this particular process has been fraught with confusion and difficulty. And it's that particular point I would like to address here. Looking at Story County, my wife and I have lived around Ames pretty much our adult lives. This is where our kids have grown up. We do not want to move, and when we want to start a business, it's here. So with that in mind, as an engineer, I look at Story County Code, and I say, okay, if we look at Chapter 90 of Story County Code, which tells me, with our business model, where can I buy? In other words, as I'm looking at properties, it doesn't make any sense to consider things that aren't properly zoned for it. So as I look at that, I am left with agricultural A1 zoning for the bed and breakfast and the campground. Those are allowed uses of A1 zoning. So I'm trying to find a property for sale, zoned A1, that does not have row crops on it or other farming currently going on. All right, you see where my dilemma, and preferably a tree or two would be nice. You know, maybe it's a dream. So trying to find a property like that for sale with access to good roads and is large enough that I don't offend my neighbors with the activities going on. You know, we're looking at, you know, 40. We really didn't consider anything under 40 acres in size. That doesn't leave many properties. In fact, it's pretty much the one I found. Okay. So it's zoned properly, all right, and that's where the confusion comes in. As I'm working with staff, and they've been very patient in this whole process, we started this back in October, I believe, with first meetings and discussions and what could you do. You know, let's look at the amendment that we're here for today. The good thing about county zoning and county ordinance is that it's written down, and it's clear. And if there is a question like cabins were not mentioned, there is a mechanism for getting a change. In other words, met with planning department, they're like, you know, that's not really a current use. Okay, I still proceeded with it. The Planning and Zoning Commission said, you know, we like this idea. Why don't we do an amendment and change this? You know, or maybe the suggestion to the amendment came first from Planning and Zoning, whichever. Wrote an amendment change. The amendment change is heard by a county board that's supposed to hear this public hearing. In other words, both sides are allowed to present. We're allowed to get some background on the code. The public weighs in. Then we move forward so that I can bring it in front of a board like this to actually decide on. And you say, we like the idea. Let's go for it. Same way with conditional use permits. Find a piece of property. Say, I have this idea for a business. You know, let's see how the idea goes, essentially. And that's what the conditional use permit is. Then, when we cross into the urban fringe plan, like clear direction and laws that you can follow get so cloudy. So, you know, the fringe plan, at its essence, is a framework and agreement that the entities have agreed to that says, when land is changed for use or split up, this is how we intend it to go.
This is so that no one gets insider knowledge, buys up all the land, and then can throw down a development. It is so that the economic playing field is fair for future development. However, my contention, and this is where we have a slight disagreement in opinion, my contention is that the fringe plan does not change existing code. In other words, if a piece of land loses its economic use when it gets pulled into the fringe plan, I think the public should be aware of that. And I don't believe that's the intent of the fringe plan. In other words, if a person has a piece of property zoned for an allowed economic intent, we shouldn't be surprised when someone wants to buy it and use it for that economic intent, like the commercial campground. So we asked, in the efforts to get along with my new neighbors, right, Ames City, we went and we asked, hey, would you at least consider, so that we could avoid any disagreement? And the response was, after they looked at it, and I quote, "Staff believes any change to the growth area and urban fringe plan inherent in this request would require a significant amount of staff resources and would be appropriately discussed in conjunction with a comprehensive plan update." My point is, when I applied for the amendment, there is a procedure. It's clear. We all know it. We follow it. I'm able to bring my idea in front of a board like yours that's able to make a decision. With the fringe plan, that same mechanism does not exist. It can be ignored and tabled until later, not because it was yes or a no, but because it was, we're busy, and it might take a few years for us to get to. My point here is that if we actually read in the fringe plan itself, I have a great quote, "The adoption of this approach would be a substantial improvement over the status quo, in which the public must navigate an often confusing and sometimes conflicting regulations of two or more jurisdictions. Other demands on the public, such as multiple application submittals, conflicting procedural schedules, and multiple layers of public hearing, would also be reduced." I know, it's
that
small
was prior part. To the plan.
You're reading prior.
That's what he's saying. He's saying that.
That is the rationale for the plan. Okay? Printed out from Story County website. Right? That's the intent. The actual real world application I have found to be quite different. And what I am asking I'm going to go to the Planning and Zoning Commission here in a week, and I am going to submit a conditional use permit. And yes, it sounds different, but here's my point. The point is that if we're taking, not changing, and once again, in the fringe plan, there are rules. If you're not subdividing land and you're not changing the zoning, you do not need approval from the City of Ames. And that is my point. This is an intended economic acceptable use of the property as currently zoned.
Sure, and so, Brad, I'm so appreciative of you coming forward with that, and I think your assessment is dead on. I would say, so many times you deal with the rule of unintended consequences, right? There's no question. The urban fringe plan was supposed to clean up exactly what you just stated, having to go to multiple entities and multiple requirements and pull it all together under one. In fact, did that, but it did create some unintended hurdles that I don't think those of us who were part of adopting the urban fringe plan foresaw at the time, that now we've got to deal with as we go. But I just want to underscore, same as I did with Laura's, what we're talking about today and what you're talking about are two entirely different issues.
They are. And I don't expect you to solve it today.
And we can't, and there's a process you've got to go through to try to solve it, but I think your point is well taken. And it's something we need to keep in mind. And frankly, Ames and Gilbert both ultimately have been great to work with as we've made amendments. And there have been amendments made to the urban fringe plan through the years, and there will continue to be amendments made coming from all entities, right? Coming from all three of the entities. And we'll get there. And I'm sorry that it's a frustrating process, and I understand it. I still tend to favor this process over what it was 10 or 12 years ago.
Maybe a significant improvement. I'm not...
It doesn't solve all the problems.
It does not. And in this particular instance, right, if I might make a bold
And I don't mean this in a negative way. Please don't take it this way. But as someone that's trying to start a small business, it would appear, sitting back and watching, that if I were a large corporation with an army of engineers and lawyers at my disposal, it would be far easier for perhaps the city of Ames to take my proposal seriously, whereas one person doing one small project is easily ignored.
Yeah, I can sure see where you'd feel that way. I'll tell you, my experience with Ames is that that is not true. I find that Ames, good and bad, tends to deal with entities in a very similar manner, and it doesn't surprise me at all the initial response you got. Let's just say that the initial response is not always the final response, and there's a process to go through, and I'm sorry.
I'm engaging in the process.
That's right.
I'm going to be at the Planning and Zoning Commission in a week.
Our Planning and Zoning Commission?
Yes, Story County, right? Because as it states, Ames approval is not necessary for my conditional use permit. And I would submit that putting a few single-story slab-on-grade structures could easily be converted into residential someday.
Sure.
And that we should let the economics drive this. In other words, 10, 20 years from now, somebody decides to buy the land and says, you know what, Perkins, here you go, we'll buy you out for this much. And I'm like, you know what, I am tired of this. Maybe I will. Let's let the economics run that. And my thought would be, and this is the case I'm going to make to the Planning and Zoning Commission, my thought would be, let's use the land for the way it is zoned today, the economic purpose that is allowed today, and then say, nothing I'm doing today is going to prohibit the development of this land as residential in the future.
Sure, absolutely. And so what I'll underscore is what the board has before it today is in the board's purview. What you're talking about, we go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then Jerry, after that, if we go to the Board of Adjustment, it wouldn't even come back to the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
If there is work to do with the interim and fringe plan, of course, that would come to the Board of Supervisors. But for us today, we're dealing with this.
Since you brought it up, I thought I'd at least...
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the frustration that you're feeling and absolutely understand it. And I'll say this. The gentleman sitting next to you is your advocate in this process. He may or may not be able to get to an answer you like, but he's your advocate. Try and get there.
He tries. He does. He tries. I mean, I understand all of his decisions, right? And the ones I agree with, the ones I don't agree with. I'm not saying I never, I do not have a problem with the staff that I'm working with.
Completely understand. Okay. Anything on what we're dealing with today?
No.
Okay. Actually, thank you very much. Is there anybody else, as we're in the middle of a public hearing, that would like to speak to Ordinance 269, which amends Ordinances Chapter 85 and 90? Anybody else? See no one else, I'll close the public hearing and I'll turn to the board. Board, a couple options. One, we can decide not to move this on. Two, we could act on second consideration and set third and final for March 13th. Or finally, we could go ahead and act on it. And since we didn't get any comments, we could go ahead and waive the third and final reading and go ahead and get moving on this.
I appreciate the tutorial. I mean, you boiled it down that anybody, and I will point to anybody if you wanted to hear something well explained as far as what the county does, you just did it. Thank you. Because I think it was done in a way that I don't think when you set out to do this last fall that you would have to undergo this process or take such a deep dive on the layered use of a piece of property you were considering for your business model. But, you spoke to some of the conflicts that I see in regards to the alliances that we form to grow this county.
Isn't it just shocking that dealing with multiple government entities could be frustrating?
It's only a piece of property that lies within a certain part has other opinions that can be rendered to it. You just find yourself within a two-mile radius of Ames. Had it been 3 miles out, it tells its own story. And I think that you know that all too well. I would be inclined to waive the third reading to move this as it's presented. We, as you just alluded, we have had no comment. I don't see anything that's changed in the interim. And if anybody needs a motion, I'll read one.
We need a motion.
Okay, read it.
I would approve The second consideration of ordinance number 269, amending the Story County Iowa Code of Ordinances, Chapter 85, General Provisions and Definitions of Chapter 90, Conditional Use, as it has been presented, and direct staff to work through the amendment process following adoption of ordinance 269 to limit the number of days per calendar year a guest may stay in a commercial cabin, and waive final reading of that today.
Do we put in the part about direction of staff?
Well, we just underscored it again. They're in the middle of it. Emily explained to us that it's not going to happen immediately because we're going to wait for codification, but it's a direction that the staff has.
Okay. In that case, I will second.
All right. Further discussion. So this would adopt and waive third and final reading, making today's action final. Anything else?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. 269 is adopted. We waive third and final consideration. Good luck.
I just want to mention to you that I was a journalist at the time when the Urban Fringe Plan was put together. So I sat for a lot of those meetings. And as convoluted as you ended up at the end, it was worse than some of those meetings.
Well, and it was,
it was a long process.
Look at Leanne, it was an 8-year process to put together the Urban Fringe Plan. Longer than that.
And yeah. I came in 2002.
So it's a long process. Not to say it doesn't have holes, but it is an improvement over what we had. Second public hearing item, consideration of proposed plan specifications and form of contract for phase 2 of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. We're going to try to authorize getting some bids.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Oh. So, next step, right? So, we've been discussing this project for quite some time, and phase one has been substantially completed, as you're aware. Phase two has been under design for a number of months, and now we are at the culmination of that and asking your approval to move forward to solicit some bids for construction of phase two. So I have a few images here that I want to show. This is the main entrance. So this would be at the northwest corner of the drive around the core facility at the research park. So let's see. This is another image from that same viewpoint. A few of them here, an aerial image. So you'll see that we have some standard branding that we have done at some of our parks as far as naming and that would be here. This is this is the Story County Conservation logo, and then the name of the park here on this side. And let me back up just couple shots here. I know this is really hard to read up there, but these are seating benches along the side on the right-hand side. And we've through design of this project, early inception, we've coined 4 C's that go along with the project: conservation, cooperation, collaboration, and connectivity. Those are the 4 C's that embrace this project throughout start to finish. And so those are engraved, or not engraved, but those are printed on each one of these seats as folks enter the park. And I should say coined by Mr. Tedesco. So as you enter, this is what you'd look at to the right. The trail will curve to the right and then lead you to some structures there. This is a closer image of those structures. Note that there's interpretive panel here. In reality, we've changed plans a little bit since this drawing. There will be 2 panels, one here and one here. And then these are picnic tables. equipped with charging stands, so someone will be able to plug in their laptop, their tablet, their phone, whatever it may be, and sit there and work on that, enjoy being outside. There'll be bike racks here. These are, if you will, rehabbed, repurposed shipping containers. There'll be two of them connected via a boardwalk, and those shipping containers will serve as overlooks into the over the prairie and over the stream below.
I have a question about these. It's got, those have an $80,000 price tag on
them. Excuse me?
Those have an $80,000 price tag on them, so $40,000 a piece. If I'm reading correctly, south entrance and out overlook, item 4, shipping container shade canopy. Are those the shade? Shipping container shade canopy.
Those are the shipping containers, yes.
So $80,000 seems like a lot of money to pay for something that I would think could be constructed for half the cost locally using wood or, resalvage materials too. That just seems really high price.
Do you think $80,000 is high to build a structure of any kind?
Well, I'm not seeing those as a structure, and that's why I was looking forward to see the photo themselves. To me, what I'm seeing up there, but that doesn't mean it's accurate, okay? My interpretation is accurate. But what I see are a couple of raised decks with roofs over them. That's what I'm equating this with. And I just think $80,000 seems high to me for that.
Well, let's hope that's right. I mean, that's our intent, that our prices come in under what our engineers have identified. What's involved with these is just a
point of order. Well, you just saw us go through 3 bids. Look at that big pack we just went through to start the meeting. You can estimate in actuals and vary widely.
Sure. And maybe rephrasing my concern a bit, looking at what it appears their function is, compared to the fact I know we're reclaiming shipping containers, I'm wondering how much of the cost of this $80,000 is for the reclamation part and how much is for the functional service part.
Yeah, I don't have that breakdown. But I will say that, as I just said, I think we all hope that the actual bids come in under what we've anticipated. And so I think that number includes all of the siding, the foundation work, the piers, all of the footings for it, includes the rehab of those, let's hope it's under that.
So then my follow-up question with this would be, if we were able to go back to the architect and just ask, the shipping container concept here, how integral is it to a part of it compared to what would the cost be versus building it locally? I am interested in that to see how much, if we are paying for an upgrade for these recycled shipping containers as opposed to it piece out about the same materials or whatever.
Yeah, so a couple thoughts. Thanks, Forrest. A couple thoughts. One, when I think about the amount of space that those are going to fill and the grade that they're going to fill, $80,000 does not sound like a whole lot of money to me, especially when the concept is to have something that's going to last and we're not going to have to go in and rebuild every 10 years. Secondly, I'm a little uncomfortable, and I appreciate the questions, but you got to think about the process that we've gone through to get to this. It's not like Mike sat down at his desk and drew up some plans and said, oh, let's put shipping containers. I mean, this has been a 3-year process to get to this point with multiple opportunities for public input, with a complete team made up of, a design team made up of members of the executive, of the conservation board, and the engineering firm and research park going through this thing one step at a time. The conservation board has gone all the way through this, and it comes to us because we are the governmental entity that does funding. and we've committed up to $4 million in funding to get this project through. And when we start talking about, I'm going to use two examples. We start talking about shipping containers and sending this whole thing back to the architect because you may not like shipping containers or glazing on windows or things like that. I think we're overstepping what our role as board of supervisors and funders are when you're getting down to that level of minutia when you've got a process in place that's supposed to filter all of that out.
Okay. And in response to that, I am looking at this as a funder, not a designer, not an architect, not somebody who's building the Taj Mahal or the Dream of the Future. I'm looking at where are we putting our tax dollars. And having covered so many projects in different areas and different realms over the years, there is a, sometimes asking about these, as you call them, minute things, asking how they tie into the concept of the project sometimes does help to funnel out some of the money that's spent for style or that's lost to the message, okay? And so there's a savings to the taxpayer. I understand I'm asking about $80,000 on a $4.7 million project, of which we're kind of have all vocally said at this table we'll go up to $4 million on. Okay, so I'm not talking about a great percentage of the project, but I do want to pay attention to if there are items that stand out that might also stand out to the public to ask, how does this fit into the scheme? How does this fit into the overall theme of this? And that, and then, therefore, if it's not really fitting in, is it something that we could save some money on? So I do feel my asking from that way is appropriate.
No, and I wasn't trying to... My concern was if we were going down the road of getting into the minutia levels of design on this thing, I think we were overstepping. I think it's a really fair question. I don't believe that you can build this structure for anything less than, I think it's much larger than you're thinking, those shipping containers. I mean, so two of them, you've got to be talking about, what, 12 by 20 in each of them? I mean, to be able to withstand the public wear and tear, you know, Joe may be better than me than that, but if we were to go out to build covered decks on that kind of grade, we'd get to $80,000 in a heartbeat.
Pretty easy, Greg. I mean...
Yeah, and Jody, if you're going to talk, come up to the microphone.
Yeah, thank you. This is not my area of expertise, just, you know, so I appreciate answering the questions.
Sure, and I appreciate the question. I just want to make sure we weren't going down a path where I got uncomfortable that we were stepping on others that we have asked to get
right
into this.
Yeah, I think, Loris, I would just add, you know, it's a good question. You look at that price tag and you think, can we just... go buy some 2x4s and build a building.
Right.
But you have to consider this outdoor structure. So that's treated lumber. And then when it comes with that, this is steel. You know, the shipping containers are going to be steel. You give them the like brick touched on it. I think probably realistically their standard shipping container is probably 12 foot by 35, 40 feet long.
That's nice.
Guessing, you know. And they're steel, so
thank you.
You know, wood's gonna rot over time, okay. So then down the road you're gonna have to replace it, especially the roofing. So.
I appreciate that. It was the shipping container part that stood out to me, not the shade canopy. Thank you. And so I appreciate
it. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
I'll move ahead.
All right.
I would just take a moment here, just as this is a process question, you know, and you think the funding component's not lost on me either, but as we get given things that we address on Tuesday, you know, the moment that you have a concern, I would just say, well, you know, hey, let me tell you what I would have done and use it to any degree you want. Don't take it up. Take it all up. If I saw what you saw and I had a concern in that respect, I'm going to do my outreach right then and there so that I had the ability to whatever I could have got from Thursday or Friday till Tuesday that Mike would have had the ability to research and address it, and then we could have had the full conversation because I'm coming at this blind for the first time because that's a line. And I don't know exactly what, you know, goes to build into an $80,000. I see the conceptual drawing, the siding as such, and then I'm saying, there, okay, what I see is a one-dimensional picture with a price tag. And then I'm saying they're trying to overlay whatever foundational knowledge I brought to the table this morning to try to get to the point, do I see value at $80,000? and that's it. And it's just one of those things. I just say that's my approach to anything that we sit down and do is just like, if I have a question, I use the department directors, Mike and here, or on a reach-out basis to the fact that we got just a little bit of lag time to get to the point that as we had a discussion before the public to not only come to a decision ourselves, but educate them on the process, we should be doing that behind the scenes to have this discussion.
We have different styles.
I know, and I'm just saying, I said either don't do anything with it or just say, well, maybe that's a good idea. And I'm not trying to say you were wrong, I'm right. I'm just saying this is how what I would have done, and I'll leave it alone.
Okay.
So just real quick, back of napkin math, I'm coming up with almost 1,000 square feet of deck space here, completely covered. And I think it's really easy to think that you might spend that kind of dollars to get that
okay.
To be able to withstand the public. Okay, Mike, next.
So, yeah, let me get a word in here and talk about this. So, when this first came up, and Rick, thank you for explaining a bit of our review process or design process with our review committee. We've had multiple stakeholders involved with this from day one, and as far as developing a master plan and moving through with phase one design and now into phase two design. So we've had this very well vetted. The idea behind shipping containers is many facets for that reason. One is that they are very durable, that they will they are close to maintenance free. I don't know if I'll say anything is maintenance free, but very close to it. As Joby said, they're all steel construction, so they will last for some time. That's number one. Number two, they provide the function that we need to provide, and that's a covered viewing area. Number three is they fit in with the word you used, Morris, is the aesthetics or something like that. They do fit with the ambiance of the park and the area, the other buildings that are going up there. So they tie with character, they're durable, and they serve an important function. That's why we landed here. We also landed here because they are more economical than any other kind of built structure that serves those purposes. What you're looking at today is merely a cost opinion. And you're not making a financial decision today. So I want to reiterate that all we're doing is authorizing, asking you guys to take the Conservation Board's recommendation and authorize the release of this package to get bids. So let me move on from that then and back where we left off here. So these are those buildings. You'll see, areas cut into the to open these up for a number of different purposes, and then kind of a rail along the front side so that there's no free access.
And I just want to point out the area that you're cutting out of there, you're using for signage.
Correct.
So the entire thing is being used.
Correct. If you notice that on the entrance sign, back up a little bit here. This material right here is what is cut out of those shipping containers on both sides. And so it's just the artist's rendition here of how that facility works. And again, this is an image from inside of those, looking out at the picnic area or the picnic tables, charging stations, interpretive panel, etc. So, now I want to go back to an overview, so step away from those. And I know this is hard to see.
So orientation here, Mike, the ISU core building is just to the bottom of the screen, just off the bottom of the screen right there.
Right here.
Workiva would be at the top left, just off the top left of the screen.
Right up here.
All right.
So, yes, university is off to the left. The name signage that we were looking at, so that is right here. And the shipping containers overview is right here. So a couple changes that I just want to point out from the master plan. One is that we had designed an overlook, if you will. We called it a streamside rest area in here in the master plan. Going further through design, realized that this was a much better spot. So we moved the overview to here. Essentially, the trail layout is the same or very similar. We have the main paved trail that comes through. This is the middle roundabout on University right here. And so we come off of that roundabout, curve down in here, go downgrade, cross the stream right here. That bridge is already in place. Come back upgrade here to the shipping containers and to the entrance. Then if you were to follow that same paved trail, you keep going to the east and you get to an intersection. So here the paved trail splits and one goes on the east side of these wetlands and one stays on the west side.
And it's uphill, downhill side.
Correct.
So the one further on the right would be uphill.
And then, so this is the paved trail that goes around these wetlands. These trails in here are what we call secondary trails. And so those are either a crushed limestone surfacing, or this one is a mulch, wood mulch surfacing. This is an area we call the ford. So this is a stream crossing right here with boulders. This is a little gathering area right here, another gathering area here, a stream overlook area here, another gathering area and a stream overlook here off of this secondary trail. And then up in this area here is a wetland. And so here we have three sections of wetland boardwalk and then a trail connecting those with interpretive signage right here as well. This area is what we refer to as the nest. And that one, if you want, I can go into more detail on that one. But essentially, it's another gathering area that's got steps, stone steps down into the wetland. It can be used for group functions. It's got a similar to an amphitheater type design built into the terrain. So that's a high knob knob right here that overlooks this wetland. And so these steps are built into that knob, orienting down into the wetland right here. Okay, and then right here, this is the paved trail that continues past beyond the boardwalk and then crosses the stream right here.
The bridge.
That bridge is in place. And then this is, so this is Workiva again, right in here. These are the existing buildings. This is Vermeer right here. Then Behringer Ingelheim is up here a little bit further. And then this trail will continue on. Now, it's not in this project, so we're not asking for that to be in this construction contract. But this trail would then continue on and meet the trail right here on South Loop Drive. But then if you continued that, you'd connect with the trail that goes under Highway 30 and past the Vet Med School. So that is the project in a nutshell.
Talk for just a minute, Mike, if you don't mind, about how much of this is going to be ADA accessible, and talk a little about some of the, I would say, unique, maybe alternative kind of materials that you're talking about using in some of this as a secondary bid option.
Sure. So all of the trails are ADA accessible with the exception of, let's see, this trail right here, this is a mulch trail. This is not specifically ADA accessible. All the paved trail is, and then all of the primary trail is here, the secondary trail here. If you will, there's three levels of trails here. There's the wide paved, and then there's the kind of the secondary trail, which is either a limestone, a crushed limestone, which meets the ADA standard, and this has been graded to meet the ADA standards down to the